Hey everyone, my name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. One of the patterns that I've noticed over the years is entrepreneurs who build measurably, dependably successful companies identify a pain, a real problem in the world, and then they understand it and they start to address it and solve it. And as a result, they end up building a successful company. And that's what's happening in today's interview. And you're going to find out about it. My hesitation for you about this interview is once you find out what today's guest does, you're kind of going to feel a little bit like my mom did the first time I took her to an Apple store. We were in New York, in Manhattan. I take her into an Apple store. I say, I know you want a camera, but I'm going to get you an iPhone. And she said, no, I just want a camera. I'm happy with my phone. I said, but mom, you want an iPhone. It's got a camera in it and all this other stuff. Just get that. She said, no, I'm not a smartphone person. So I said, fine. And I didn't get it. And then a few months later, I just kind of, you know what I'm talking about, guy. A few months later, I actually just bought her, I bought my dad an iPhone and I shipped it over. She looked at it and it just opened her eyes. This person who thought that she was not a smartphone person suddenly saw, hey, it's easier to take pictures on this. And actually, it's more fun to share them. I don't have to upload it to my computer. Why do I need a digital camera from Canon? My iPhone's better. And so the reason I'm telling you this is sometimes the things that we're a little scared of, like my mom was scared of a smartphone, are the things that need to be presented to us and open our eyes. Okay, so here is what today's guest does. His name is Guy Greenberg. He is the co-founder of a company called Kula Data. Here's the part that's going to scare you, but I promise as we go through, you're going to understand this. You're going to understand how he built it and whatever he used to build his business, you're going to be able to apply to your business. Kula Data is a big data behavioral analytics platform. All right, we're going to find out how he did it and how he got here and how he's building it up. And we probably won't find out his revenue, but I promise to ask him because my producer said that he warned him that that's what I'm going to be asking. All right, this whole thing is sponsored by two great sponsors. The first is a company that helps me close more sales, get more business, and I urge you to try it. It's called Pipe Drive. And the second is a company that I've hired a developer from, a designer from, and now somebody to help me with my finances. Such a great company. It's called Top Tal. Top is on top of your head. Tal is in talent. I'll tell you more about those sponsors later. First, Guy, welcome.
Hi.
Hey, I saw you smile as I did that intro. What was it about that intro that resonated with you?
Taking your mother to buy the iPhone. So actually, I'm the iPhone guy for my mother. Every day I get a phone call, fix this and fix this, as if I'm the expert. So
you relate. You know, we all have stuff we're afraid of. For me, it was, I had a bunch of Mixergy interviewees to my house, and I said, I'm going to cook something for them. I don't know how to cook. I called my dad every step of the way. I had him on the phone. I said, how do I do this? How do I boil? Like, I had to boil tomatoes and peel. I don't know how to do it. So we all have things that we're afraid of, but we got to learn them. Hey, let's just go back a little bit before we talk about Kula Data. You were working at a different business, and you had a pain with KPI implementations. This is at a previous company that you were with, Gilan. What's KPI implementations, and what's the problem that you had?
Well, it's not that I have a problem, but basically KPIs, they gave me only a snapshot of the business. So what's the current situation right now? It's kind of how many what are my sales distributed by geography, and this kind of I would say traditional way of analysis and BI has been there for almost 40 years and hasn't changed much. And I started to think about a different way of analyzing, a more revolutionary way of analyzing data, which is based on time series. This is the behavior analytics we all
let me pause for a second. KPI, key performance indicators, every business has to do this, right? We internally have a spreadsheet, and I know that's going to turn some people off, where people on the team have to go out and get the data that we need. How many people joined the mailing list? How many of them bought? That kind of thing. That's what you're saying, that every business had to do. You had to do it. And what was the issue with doing it?
So I think businesses still have to do it. It's something that's fundamental for every business. However, it only gives you a certain picture of what's going on. And today, especially the online world is much more dynamic. Things are changing all the time, and you have to see things not as a snapshot, but as a kind of a dynamic way. For example, what causes people to renew an account? What causes people to abandon their cart when they're shopping? These are things that you cannot get just from a snapshot. You have to understand a series of actions over time, And this is behavior analytics. This is the fundamental difference between KPI-based BI, which is basically a pivot table or a show me sales by country, etc.
Yes.
Compared to behavior analytics that shows me, for example, show me the series of actions that lead to a checkout in an online store. So this is a different way of analyzing data. Behind it, you have to have a very sophisticated way of analyzing the granular data, the actions themselves. And this is something that traditional BI lacks today. And that's
BI, by the way, business intelligence.
Yeah, business intelligence. So I'm not saying BI is going anywhere. It's here to stay, of course. But I think the new way. Era of online big data, event-based data, things that are happening very dynamically is bringing also a different way of analyzing data, which is a behavioral analysis. It's a kind of a time series analysis, and this is the main difference.
You know what? It's good for me to hear that even a company your size, you had 300 employees back when, am I pronouncing the company name right? Gilan?
Yes.
Gilan, even when you were running Gilan, you had 300 employees. You even had a hard time getting that data. Sometimes I feel like, what is wrong with me? What is wrong with my team that we can't get the kind of data that you just mentioned? And you're saying what you told our producer was it would take you 6 months to a year to implement it. It would take you 5 to 25 people on your team to try to get this data together. This was a frustration you had at the business before you sold it. Am I correct in understanding that?
Yes, exactly. What happens is that you come to an organization, you have to map all the data sources, you have to decide which one to choose, you have to clean the data, then connect it, create a transformation, load the data, analyze it. This whole process is very tedious. It has a high rate of failure.
Yes.
And it takes a long time. Another problem with it in a dynamic world, the changes every day. Once you finish this, after 6 months, it's already outdated. And today, the time to market is critical. So you want to have something within days or even hours so that you can adjust your analytics to your business dynamics. And this is something you couldn't do in the traditional way of doing it. And this is what brought me to found Cooler Data, to do these things within days instead of within months.
So you know what? I went back and I found an old GigaOM article about you from 2013, and they said that you and your co-founder, Tomer Ben-Moshe, you guys were running a consulting business after you sold your company. What I'm wondering is, guy sells his company, why start a consulting business? It feels to me like this was part of a bigger strategy that I need to understand. Tell me about that.
Well, I wouldn't say it was consulting. I would say it's a combination of an angel and consultancy. I was more of an advisory. I did some angel investments in a few companies, actually around big data and that area.
I see.
And part of my added value was bringing my knowledge in BI and big data, and this was part of the investment, part of the whole package.
I see. And as you were giving them advice, as you were looking inside at their business, you started, and again, this is according to this GigaOM article that I read, you started to see, quote, a tremendous hunger for what you call unified behavioral analytics, this understanding of unifying not just the data that you have from the website, but what about the stuff that happens in CRM? What about the stuff that happens offline? Am I understanding that right?
Yes, exactly. Like, imagine I have a customer, a foreign exchange customer. So you would probably register and in the website, and you want to start to trade. However, you would get a phone call from the contact center from a person that will connect you via a phone, and you would probably put the data in a CRM system. So you already see two touch points. One is the web touch points, and the other is the CRM. Then you would probably start trading, and that was an online trading system. And you would also have to follow up on him by emails and by his web interaction. And in order to get this full journey, you have to have a system that supports this. The benefits, the business benefits of this thing is you give him a much better experience, you manage to bring up his revenue, to retain him, to make a more satisfied customer. And this is something only Cooler Data can do, and I think this is one of our main strengths.
I see. You know what? That happens to us too. If I talk to a customer at an event, for example, I put it into my personal CRM. If somebody buys from us, it goes into our business e-commerce CRM. If they then talk to our customer service, it goes into our email system. There's no unified place where we could see, hey, this is a person who talked to Andrew and someone who bought from us, and now he has a customer service issue. And how did he go from one to the other to the other so we can find more people like him and give them a similar journey? And that's what you're talking about.
Exactly. Now, the web analytic tools that you have today, they're very good at analyzing what you're doing on the website or on the mobile app. However, when it comes to what's going on in the other sources like the CRM or the call center or the trading or the any other system, they fall back. And then that requires to start building a very expensive and tedious data warehouse, which is something we would like to avoid. And this is where Cooler Data comes in.
I got to tell you, I'm looking over your shoulder as we're talking. What is that framed, I don't know what it is, the framed photo behind you?
Well, this is a photo from my army service that I served in the rescue unit, the Air Force rescue unit, which you have to rescue. And this is me actually going down the helicopter. And
oh, that was you in there. It's so tiny on my screen, I can't tell. I heard that there was a situation in one of the rescues where some, I guess it was a kid who went into an underwater cave. What happened there?
Yes.
I think this gives me a sense of your personality and how you learn to make decisions. What happened there? Do you mind talking about it?
Yeah, it's many years ago, actually. And it was a school trip that about a 16 or 17-year-old kid was told that this cave is a cave you can dive into and get into an air bubble. But he wasn't advised to do that. However, he decided and he decided to go in. And apparently this year there was lots of rain and there wasn't any bubble. So we practically drowned, and we came with our diving equipment and immediately, you know, you have to take a decision whether to do a whole process of securing yourself, which will take several hours, just jump in and try and rescue him. So the decision was go in and try and rescue him. Unfortunately, it was too late. It was already half an hour in and he died. Told that I took an unnecessary risk, but however, this is the kind of a decision you have to take in seconds. It's probably not the optimal decision, but in the startup industry, I think you have to make fast decisions as opposed to optimal, and sometimes you're wrong. You know, that's what happens. But under pressure, you have to take all the time decisions. And I think this is one of the lessons I learned from there.
You know what? I'm surprised that you took a positive lesson from that. It almost feels like because the kid died, and feels so, now that I'm a dad, just saying that is so painful for me. That because of what happened, that you might take away from that, that it's not worth taking a risk. It's not worth going after, because even if I make my best effort attempt and risk my own life, things may not work out. Why didn't you take that negative away from that?
Well, as I told you, it's very easy to say afterwards what was the right decision. That's, I would say, a no-brainer. But the thing is, you have to take the decision in the right time. And I think if you think you had a chance to save the kid, then it was the right decision. So unfortunately, you know, it didn't work. But at the time, if I thought that, you know, it's good enough to take the chance and they have a chance of saving instead of waiting a few hours and do all the necessary secure things. So I would say it was at the time the right decision. So same as in business, you do the business decision at the right time. You have to decide to shut down a feature, to turn down a customer, to turn down an investment, to take an investment in bad terms. These are things you have to decide. And only later on in perspective, you know, if you're right or wrong. But the thing is, you don't have much time to have all the considerations. And it's good in an optimal world, but the world is, you know, very dynamic and under pressure, and you have to decide quickly.
My brother for a while there was like a professional full-time poker player. And I remember going in and watching him and hearing the conversations after some of his poker matches. And he and his poker friends would have to remind themselves, hey, you got beat on this one hand, but you made the right decision based on the numbers, based on the odds of winning, based on the hands that you had. And they had to just keep reinforcing, don't take away from this that because you lost, your move was wrong. Inevitably, if you keep doing the same move in the same situation, you're going to do well. And I think that that's important to take away from business too. So many times when something doesn't work out, we think, well, that the whole chain of events leading to it and every decision-making point up to that point was a failure just because it didn't work out. And that's not the right way to approach it.
I acquired a few companies and in my career, and you know, some were good decisions, some were bad, but eventually, you know, you can do a due diligence as much as you matches. In the end, it's your gut feeling and what you think, and that's the way you decide. So, you know, deciding under pressure according to the best knowledge you have and your gut feeling is probably what you have to do when you're in a startup.
Okay. After your military career, you ended up being the CEO of Gilan Business Insights. That's the company that we talked about earlier. You were there, as I understand it, and I'm looking at your Crunchbase entry or the Crunchbase entry on that business. There are lots of different things that you did, but at the heart of it, you are in charge of managing people's data and making sense of it for them. Am I right?
Right.
Through software and services. You guys then sold it, Crunchbase says, for $19.9 million. Is Crunchbase right? Is that public?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you make out well from that sale?
What?
Did you make out well from that sale? Did you end up with at least $1 million from that sale?
I'm okay.
You're okay. You won't even say that.
Okay. I'm okay.
Yeah. All right. Is it weird that I'm asking you a lot of personal questions?
No, no, that's fine.
Okay. All right. You left that company because?
You have a, basically you have a 2 years lock and then you decide if you stay. I'm not a corporate guy. So, you know, working in a 7,000 employee company is not for me. And I knew it from the start. I think most entrepreneurs find it hard working in a corporate, and that was again a decision I made quite from the beginning.
Okay, all right. That brings us to this business and how you started. Let me take a moment to talk about my sponsor, then we're going to come back in and tell them, and then talk about the first move that you made, which was kind of surprising, but I think it's one that a lot of entrepreneurs end up taking, and then how you raise money and what one little thing, actually it was one big thing, changed everything for you in raising money. But first, I got to tell everyone about a company called Pipedrive. Guy, my guess is you don't know Pipedrive. Am I right?
Right.
I'm going to be open with you. Salesforce is an investor in your business. Am I right?
Yes,
because Salesforce wants you to help their customers make sense of all the data in Salesforce and connect it to what's happening on your customers' websites and so on. Here's the thing. For many people, Salesforce is terrific. For some companies, it's just not. It's overkill. For businesses like mine, when I want to just close sales, what I do is I just fire up Pipedrive. I create a new pipeline. Pipelines are steps of each sales process that I have. Like, what's the first thing that we do? What's the second thing? And so on. And then I start to work the system. In fact, it's helped us organize our sales, close more sales, and get insights into our sales. Let me focus on the last part because you're a data person. And I think this is an issue that a lot of people have. A couple of years ago, I was talking to one of my listeners, and he said, no one likes me. It's so hard when you're starting a business. No one wants to talk to you. Andrew, you don't understand. Anytime you try to sell something, of course, people are going to buy from you because they know you, they trust you, you have a bigger customer base, and so you're going to get yeses where I get no. I said, you've been making these offers and people are turning you down? He goes, yeah, they're not even responding. They're not even listening to me. I said, hey, we're using Skype. Go up to the conversation menu in Skype, hit the screen share, and I want you to do something for me. So he did it. And I said, here's what I want you to do. Go into Gmail, type into the search box, is:sent. And he did that. And I said, okay, now show me all the emails that you sent to your prospects trying to sell. And he showed me two. He sent out two messages and he thought he was a failure because those two people didn't respond. What a mistake. But it's the delusion that a lot of salespeople have. They think that they made more sales calls, sent more sales emails, and they actually did. Since then, I've started telling everyone, go sign up for Pipedrive, organize your process, how you think you're going to sell. And if you're telling me that people aren't buying, I want to see the stats section on Pipedrive. The beautiful thing about Pipedrive is it shows you how many people did you actually send sales emails to? How many of those did respond? So if someone says, I can't get anyone to buy, and I look at their stats in Pipedrive, I can see they only sent out two or they sent out 20. Or I could see where they're dropping the ball. My friend Noah Kagan says that he gets 50% of his responses the second time he pings someone. He's well-known, successful entrepreneur. He still gets 50% responses the second time when he sends a ping saying, hey, did you get my first message? Most people don't do that. Pipedrive will help you do that and so much more by organizing your sales process and holding you accountable. I want you to go check them out at the special URL if you're listening to me because they're longtime Mixergy fans. I've sent so many customers their way that they keep buying ads from us, and they're giving us in return for that 14 days free. In 14 days, you will be able to organize your sales and make real sales if you use this software. So go to pipedrive.com/Mixergy. You'll get 14 days free, 25% off for 3 months after that. And really, more than that, an organized way of selling. Get yourself some sanity. Increase your sales, but also do it in an organized, sane way. You'll be glad you did. Go check them out. pipedrive.com/Mixergy. Guy, what do you think of that as like a sales pitch? I always like to get like a report card for it.
I would like to hire you, a great sales guy.
You know what? Thank you. As a kid, I used to admire the infomercial salespeople who could just sell. I used to wish that I was like at an age where I can go on the Coney Island boardwalk and watch those people who could sell to strangers because I could learn from them. There was an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm where Larry David said, I want to sell cars. And I think most people who watched it couldn't identify with it. I could. I always dreamed that I could sell cars for just like 6 months. Let me learn it. And so, you know, doing these ads helps me do that. You're smiling. Do you identify with any of that?
Well, actually, I'm not the greatest sales guy, so not really. I like to sell out of, a professional kind of view, which I understand the business, I understand the product, I understand the technology, not because I'm a great talker or that kind of stuff. So, I really admire the guys who can sell anything. Me too.
My sense is that your CEO, Dan, is more of the salesperson. Am I right?
Yeah.
And that we probably had you on instead of Dan. Dan would be able to like talk. He'd be able to sell us on this business. But we had you on because you're the founder and that's our focus on Mixergy. Am I right?
Yeah, you probably wanted to see the founder, but definitely you would sell better than me.
What about the first step that you took was you said, hey, look, I sold this company. I understand the problem because I've been doing some angel investing. I see where the next business needs to be. Why didn't you start it? Why did you go with Tomer Ben Moshe? Why did you contact him and say, hey, let's do this together?
So we knew each other from the past. We did a lot of activities together when I was in Gilon and Tomer was in Microsoft. We worked with Microsoft all up services when it was just launched, and we did a great job in penetrating the market. And I think we had a good experience of working as a team and with BI technology. We were very excited when the big data on the cloud came in and all the new technology and how to utilize it. As I mentioned, not only for scale, which is of course goes without saying, but to analyze things in a more exciting way, the behavior analysis, and do it in a few days instead of a few months. I think all this together is very exciting and it's a game changer, I think, in the world. Like when I built a data warehouse for the largest bank in Israel, Bank Leumi, it took us 2 years and it was a 40 team of 40 people. It was Teradata, 3 terabytes. That was huge by then. Yeah, you know, today my smallest customers have much more than 10 terabytes. So
I get more than that just from Google
and
Drive.
And the price is and that price is a fraction of less than a promille of what it cost then. So, you know, the price per terabyte. So, you know, it was a game changer. So what happens there? We had to consider each transaction, whether it's worth analyzing because the cost was so high. And today we're just putting everything the smallest company with 2 or 3 people, e-commerce site, gaming company, they can afford things you can only imagine 15 years ago. So that's for me very exciting, and that's what makes the new businesses what we call insight-driven. They take their decisions on their data on hourly basis. You know, before the CEO of a bank or any other enterprise organization used to get a printed report. He hardly looked at, and today the new CEO is the type that goes into it, drills into the data, analyzes, knows exactly what data science is, knows predictive modeling sometimes. So, you know, this is a different era, a different generation, and for a data guy who's been in this for 25 years, I think it's very exciting.
So the first step you took, you told our producer, was raising money. I wonder if there was a step before that you just happened not to bring up with the producer. Did you talk to potential customers before? Did you say, look, I have this experience in data. I think there's a big opportunity in doing much more because of the cloud. If I do this, would you be my customer? Did you look at potential customers? Did you talk to them before launching?
Yes, of course. As I mentioned, when I was an agent, I did some consultancy and also companies, because I was considered a kind of a expert in the area, the main expert. So companies came to me and said, look, I have this problem. I'm a smart electricity company who measures electricity consumptions in building, and I collect lots of data. I don't know what to do with it. So how can I monetize it? So I would give them the advice. You have to do this and this. You have to build this whole system. This is the outcome you can bring and how we can sell. And in the end, your main asset will be your data, not your sensors. So I would give these companies this advice, sometimes for free even, just and I realized that even the advice I gave them, it would still take them quite a long time to build this, and it would be expensive, and they don't necessarily have
the right resources. The resources to do it. Okay. And so were you also saying to them, if I build this, will you buy? Were you trying to get commitments for purchase also?
Yeah, actually, I was asked that many of them told me, look, can you build this for me? So I'd say, look, not now, but if you wait a year till the platform's ready, I would probably give you. But, you know, it's not something that Kulodata is not something that took 6 months to build. It took about 2 years to build. It's a very complicated, lots of IP, lots of technology, and it wasn't something I could promise him and then deliver after 3 months. But it gave me the right idea that we can do it and we should do it, and that will bring the value.
All right. Then you went to raise money, and it wasn't hard. It was actually easy because
we had track record. We had the exit. I personally had to exit before, and we're experts in the domain. You know, I think you have a proven track record, and you know what you're talking about because you're an expert in your domain. So it makes things easier. Not say it doesn't go without saying, but based a lot on that area, and of course your personal relationship with the investors that you have from previous encounters.
How do you connect with the investors?
Well, I know them. One of them was invested in previous company, two previous companies, and you and the other, we did some co-investment time as an angel and a consultancy to some of their companies. So, you know, you develop those relationships, and when you come to raise money, of course, it makes things easier.
I see. Okay. Yeah. And you had that.
It's not a, you get an open check. You get a kind of a certain amount that's a convertible loan that if you prove to deliver certain KPIs, then you get the extra around there.
Okay. Then it was time to start. Once you raised the money, it was time to build the product. How did you know at that point what goes into your first version, considering all the different data, all the different ways you could analyze it?
So I think you have to have two things that must be in even in the first MVP. One is the loading semi-structured data in real time, which is very or at the time it wasn't easy, or even today it's not an easy task. So you can get events streaming in from tens of thousands of devices and at the same time, and you have to handle this amount. So I would call this part the backend part, loading the data and enriching it. And the other part was to show a different way of analyzing the data that is not the usual traditional way of analyzing, and what I talked about, the behavior analytics. So proving these two things in the platform was our first goal. Wasn't easy, a lot of problems. The technology was very new at the time, and building a beta on a beta is probably not the best idea, but in the end, it proved out that we bet on the right technology, and it worked.
It worked, and still you had to educate the market. You still had to say, this is the way you guys are used to dealing with key performance indicators, with metrics of success, but here's this new thing that we have. Talk about that. What was the difference between how they saw the world and how you wanted them to see the world?
Yeah, so they used to see this dashboard showing them engage with the sales and the top 10 customers, top 10 products, and they were actually quite happy with that. So, you know, coming to them and saying, look, you're missing something by not analyzing in this different way, it was something we had to educate. So, you know, to teach them, you know, today it's probably more common. Funnel analysis, cohort analysis, path analysis, these are things that today you see quite a lot, it's much easier. But at the time, at the beginning, it wasn't so trivial to educate. Understanding what is a retention heat map is not something that comes intuitively. And you have to explain, what do you see here on the screen? Why is it important? Why a behavioral segment in the online world is much better than a demographic segment? Because practically, many of the people put in fake data about their demographics, like their gender or their age. Whereas when I'm talking about behavior, I don't really need to know what the demographic data, because I base all the segments and my analysis on the behavior. And that is much more accurate and gives a much better picture. So, you know, when you explain it, it makes sense and people understand. It's not so easy to articulate it in two sentences. You have to actually to sit with a person, show and explaining, and this takes webinars, it takes meetups, it takes lots of content writing, and this is something, unfortunately, you have to deal with when you educate the market. But I think if you see the trends, you hear much more of the term behavior analytics nowadays, and cohort and funnel and path are probably things that I would say almost a commodity. So it did happen eventually, and I'm happy. But as we went on, we saw it's not enough. You know, not behavior as alone, as standalone, is not enough. You have to connect it with more enterprise data in order to really get the real value out of it. As I mentioned, the story about connecting the CRM data, trading, e-commerce and the online data together gives you a much better picture and a much more a clever way of analyzing. I'll just give you an example of, you know, everyone know what's a customer lifetime value. That's a very common thing. However, if you calculate the customer lifetime value only according to the activity on the website, on the e-commerce site, you wouldn't know you actually returned the product to the store, and practically the revenue from him is much lower. And actually, he did a lot of, he spent a lot of time from the support, and he's not a good customer as I thought he is. He's a much lower value customer. So this is something you can only get the full picture when you merge the online and the offline data together. And this is and I think this is what we realized as opposed to the beginning when we looked only at the behavior, when we realized you have to have the unified and the connection of the online and the offline.
And this was you or your company having to go out and convince businesses that this was important, that this made sense, and explain to them what the insight would be and how they could use it. Am I right?
Right. So, you know, different types of businesses. You see, you know, the early adopters are actually the online businesses, the e-commerce, the gaming. They live data, they live behavioral, that's what they do all day, actually, and their main business. So it's not so hard to convince those, I would say, low-hanging fruit. However, going into a larger organization, which is, I would say, brick and mortar, and now moving into online is a bit more difficult. They're more, it takes more time to realize things, and they're more conservative in how they think. So, yes, I think we did it the right way, going to the low-hanging fruit for fast adopting businesses and then moving up the stream.
All right, I wrote, if you heard me typing, it's me writing a couple of questions. I want to come back in a moment and ask you some questions that just seem obvious to me, and I can't figure out the answer to. As you were talking, I wrote them down. Let me take a moment and tell everyone about a company called TopTal. Do you know about TopTal?
Nope.
Oh, they're phenomenal. This is the company that has the best developers in their network. If you need to hire a developer, you go to them. They match a perfect person with you. If you like them, you get to go right away, and they're part of your team. But here's what I did with them recently. They added a finance department, and a lot of the stuff that you're talking about, even if I had the data, I don't know that I could analyze it enough. I don't have the background in it, in understanding, like in doing cohort analysis, for example, in understanding where our best customers are. Even if you give it to me, I need someone to help analyze it. And for a long time, I thought, because I don't know how to do it, that's not me. I will just grow at some point and we'll find a solution for it. But it's not me. It's not now. And then I had lunch with, actually drinks, let's be honest, it was scotch, with my sponsor, TopTal, and they keep wanting me to talk about their finance department, but I don't want to talk about it, because when they tell me to talk about it, they say, you know, you have people in your audience who are raising money, they need spreadsheets, our guys could do their spreadsheets, our guys can, and I say, no, I don't know that that's the right audience for us to target, people who are trying to raise money and tell them that this is, TopTal's going to help them do it. I said, you know what, I have this issue. Guys, I'm trying to figure out where my money is going, what's making us the most money, what's the most valuable part of our business, what am I missing in the way we're structuring our company? Would your finance people be able to help with that? And I said, yeah, we can do that. So I was introduced to a matcher. I talked to the matcher and I said, here's what I'm looking for. I explained it, and he went away and he came back with a job description. He said, I think this is what you're after, not the way you explained it, but I understand what you're looking for. Does this make sense? I said, yeah, that's a job. He goes, great. Give me a couple of days. I'll find some great people for you. And he did. He found three terrific candidates. I talked to all three. I did a screen share with them. I showed them my finances. I got some insights from them. And then there was one guy who was just so good. His name was Jack. I said, boom, Jack's my guy. I messaged the people over at TopTal and I said, set me up with Jack. Jack's been a tremendous help. He looks at he loves data. He loves data so much that he looked at all the credit card charges that we've had over the last year, and he found opportunities for us to cut our costs with credit card processing. I didn't even know the credit card processing was a big cost, because if I look at my income statement, all I see is like little tiny expenses, and I didn't realize we should batch them and understand it. And I didn't realize where we could save money with it. I didn't understand where we could cut costs on some software. Anyway, that's what he did. That's what he helped me with. If you're out there and you need help with any part of the finance of your business, you shouldn't have to deal with it alone. Hire someone from TopTal. They're not very expensive. I'll be honest with you guys. I'm paying about $250 for Jack. This is a guy who came from McKinsey background, ran a couple of companies for the Carlyle Group, phenomenal guy. So it's definitely worth it for me. And I don't need him for that many hours a month. But you'll get that kind of person, someone who could go through cohort analysis, spreadsheet creation for you, help you understand where your money is going, how you should be structuring your business, help you ask the kind of questions that you didn't even know you need to be aware of. Like for me, I didn't know that I should be rethinking whether we are an LLC or not. I didn't know that the tax plan that Donald Trump put forward a few weeks ago could actually impact my business and what I should do to take advantage. I didn't even think of that. But he did. All right. Go check him out. I have a special URL. When you go to this URL, they're going to give you something they're not giving anyone else. The URL is going to give you 80 hours of TopTal developer credit when you pay for your first 80 hours, in addition to a no-risk trial period of up to 2 weeks. Trial period is phenomenal. Go check him out at toptal.com/mixergy. That's top as in top of your head, tal as in talent, toptal.com/mixergy. All right, guy. That one went a little bit long. I get very passionate about TopTal. Even if you and I were to have dinner together, this is what I would talk to you about. It helps because you know what? You're running in circles where you've got like investors now who look over your numbers and give you feedback. Who gives you the best feedback? Who's the person who helps guide you, guy? I don't have that. I do now with Jack, but...
Yeah, so, you know, of course, I try to speak to several people. I think the best feedback I get is people who are CEOs of startups like me. We struggle with the same problems. We have the same pains, same frustrations. You know, it's the only guy that really understands you. And I have a few friends that, like me, we passed difficult times. We had the successes, we had failures, and I think these are the best people, the CEOs of the startups, and
how do you find the best people that you can sit together and talk about your failures, show your numbers to? How do you find these people?
Well, you know, doing business, you do business with many people, and some of them you get to have really close relationships, and you stay friends even out of business, and these are the best people. The best advice I get from these people because they really understand me from my point of view.
So it's not a formal organization or formal search structure for you. It's just, hey, you know what? Anytime I come across an entrepreneur that I dig, I spend some time with him. We become friends. And through the friendship, I don't just ask him about life and in general. But you're saying I also show him my finances, talk to him about my business challenges and get feedback. Am I right?
Exactly. Everyone is always short of cash. Everyone is now trying to raise money. Everyone has a problem hiring employees. Everyone has a problem finding the product market fit. They're all in the same area. And speaking to those people is the best advice you can get.
So when you were talking about getting customers, I flashed to something that we said earlier in the conversation, which was when you talk to the companies you invested in, they said, yeah, we have this problem. We don't know how to analyze this data. They said, if I solve it, would you be customers? I'm wondering a few things about that. Number one, were they eventually customers of yours? Did they a couple of years later when you came to them and said it's done, were they in a position where they wanted to sign up?
Some of them have already, some of them did, some of them already built their own system. So they said, look, you know, it took me a year and I invested $500,000, but I already did it. It's sunk cost. I'm not going to go into anything again. So, you know, it's, but some of them did. So, you know, no one waits for you. Some is running and, but eventually, when you came with something good and they're not happy with what they have, then they'll be happy to change. No one has sentiments.
Do you remember your first customer?
Yeah.
Who was it? Can you tell me about him?
You can tell. First of all, I want to say that the first customer is kind of our design partners. You know, they eat a lot of shit. They get all the bugs and all the beta release and alpha and everything. So these customers help you build the company. They don't necessarily stay your customers because, you know, they took a long time. But we have some customers who have been with us for about 4 years, and And yes, they still remember the hard times they went through, but they're happy now.
Why would someone be a customer of a new business knowing that they're going to be the ones who have to eat all the bugs?
It depends. If you can bring them value, they sometimes overcome the bugs and they are willing to eat. Of course, they pay less or they don't pay at all. So, you know, they have some benefits. They also can ask for features that are relevant for them and they'll probably get what they want because they're your design partner. So if you're willing and if the bugs and all the problems are not so terrible, so you have some benefits of being the first time because you get a more customized system for your and you get some consultancy and best practices from my knowledge. So I'd probably say there's cons and pros in that, but it depends a lot on the type of guy you're working with. If he's an early adopter and he knows that and he understands the situation.
I get that. Is it also that they have a pain point that's so big that they're willing to deal with an imperfect product?
Yeah, basically, just dealing and loading huge amounts of data that you generate is a big challenge in itself. I'm not talking about even doing sophisticated behavior analysis. This is something that trying to do on your own is quite a big risk and it's quite expensive. So if you have someone who you know is a domain expert in that area, you have a very a lot of benefits doing so. And if even if it's a kind of an intermediate solution, in our days, time to market is worth a lot of money and worth a lot of pain. So I think, yes.
One of your big customers, and you got a bunch of big customers on your website. I saw them. Coca-Cola is the one that keeps standing out for me. But another one makes total sense. Target. They have an online presence and an offline presence. I could be shopping for their stuff online and then going into the store or vice versa. I'm wondering if you could tell us the issue that you had with Target when they signed up as customers.
So I don't like to refer to customers without their approval. And basically, you have some case studies there you can talk about. So I'm willing to talk about customers that have quotes in the website because they're probably...
I see. I've got a story okay about them here. But
I don't want you to talk about customers who don't. But basically... Let's take an example of Web Collage, which is a company that supplies data to many Fortune 1000 companies in the US about their content, the usage of the content. They manage the content, the digital content for those brands, huge companies, and they want to supply those brands with data on the usage of the content, and this is something they use cooler data in order to supply. So practically many Fortune 1000 companies use cooler data via them, and they do it with our platform. So this is an example of a very good use case of how you can leverage your product and give an extra service, insights on top of your basic platform.
Let's talk about a challenge. How about one customer here? I won't mention the name, but I see them in my notes from your conversation with our producer. They left you. And part of the reason they left was you didn't realize that they were having so many issues. And the other thing was that, you know what? They thought that you guys weren't ready for them. How do you deal with that, where you're still figuring it out? Just like you said, everyone has product market fit issues. Everyone's trying to figure out their product. Boy, I'm seeing that like your whole demeanor changes when I'm talking about these issues. Am I right? Am I picking up on the right vibes here? That this is not a happy thing for you to talk about. It's still painful. I'm almost like remembering how you talked about the rescue operation that you were on earlier when I talked to you about some of these challenges. No kidding.
Yeah, it is pain. I think you take it personally when you're an entrepreneur. Every customer that leaves, you take it personally. And in the end, the customer is always right. If he has his reasons, then he has his reasons. Only thing you can do is try and learn from it. And for the next time, I think one of the things I realized over the years that customers who shout at you and scream at you and give you the worst phone calls are the best customers, because they help you improve and help you react. And the customers, the dangerous ones, are the ones that don't say anything. You think they're happy.
Right.
And they're actually not happy, and you only realize it when it's too late. So you have tools to measure that. And today we use a lot of tools to measure the usage of our own customer, the behavior. We do Kula. We call it Kula on Kula. We just measure. And by understanding the way customers use the platform, which features they use, how many times they use it, what kind of things they like, what kind of things they don't, just by analyzing this data, we can predict a customer who's unhappy before he actually knows that. So these are things that help us improve. However, you know, I can't say we can avoid the things that happen. There's always external sources. Companies get bought. Companies go out of business. The only thing we would like to minimize to almost zero, and we did a very good job, is voluntary churn. People who are actually unhappy with the platform and want to leave you. And this is something we really do our best. And by both analyzing the data, staying in contact, and trying to improve ourselves all the time.
All right. The final question I have is about revenue. And I know you told our producer, I'm not telling revenue. We're not ready. We're not at a point where we want to talk about it. Can I get a sense of like just the size of where you guys are right now? Are we talking about a business that's doing over $1 million in sales, over $5 million? Is it just getting started?
So as I mentioned, we're not going to talk about revenue. However, we have over 60 customers. We're growing fast. We just doubled our revenue from last year. I think the company is on a very good track and getting very good traction. And also we're going up the value chain. Our per customer is also gone up 50%. So basically, this is what I can give you. Otherwise, we're a private company and we don't disclose this data.
What is a typical cost? I actually did a search on your site to see price. Usually I get, like through a Google search, I get some back page that lists pricing. With you, I get a page that says, hey, talk to our team and get your pricing. Fill out this form. Roughly, what are we talking about here? If somebody wanted to hire you, if a major Fortune 500 company wanted to hire you, what are we talking about?
So the pricing starts from around $2,000 a month, based on certain volume, and grows up to tens of thousands. Depends on the size and the complexity. The main driver is the volume of the data, the number of events, practically.
Okay. All right. So if the cheapest price is $12,000 a month for 12 months a year, 60 customers minimum, we're talking about at least
cheapest price is $2,000 a month.
Yeah, so that means at least minimum $1.4 million, $1.5 million roughly, and that is the smallest amount that somebody could pay for the service. All right, that gives me a sense of where you guys are. Very low sense, frankly. I know that it's got to be much more than that, but it gives me a base, a floor. All right. Thanks so much for doing this interview. Congratulations on having built it. How do you feel it went? You know that I like to evaluate every time I do an ad. I like to evaluate it. How was that? How do you feel that this interview went for you?
How did I feel? What?
How did this interview go for you? Evaluate the interview from your point of view. How do you feel it went?
Yeah, so I really enjoyed it. You know, I think the conversation was very intuitive, and I didn't have to think it. I think you give a very good feeling, so
good.
Well done.
Yeah, I was watching your times, and I said, sometimes it's like this.
Personally, I felt well. I liked it.
Good. All right. Thanks so much for doing this interview. I appreciate you being on here. For anyone who wants to go check out Guy's website, the URL is Coola Data.com. COOLA Data.com. Like the word cool with an. Where'd you guys come up with the name Coola?
Well, in Hebrew, Coola means it's just data. It's not a big deal. It's just, it's only data. No, not a big deal. So that's what Coola means in
Really?
In
like Hebrew, people say it's only data. It's not a big deal so often that they need a single word for it? Eh, it's just data?
Yeah, it's Coola data. It's just data. It's not something, not a big deal. So
I see. Yes. All right, Coola. Coola.com. And of course, my two sponsors are the company that helps me sell, that will help you sell more. Frankly, use it individually or bring it in with your team. You're going to love it. It's called Pipedrive, pipedrive.com/Mixergy. And the company that I can't stop talking about, if you invite me to dinner, there's a good chance that if you say the name type, Top Tal, I will keep raving about them. They're called Top, as in top of your head, Tal as in talent, toptal.com/Mixergy. And I'm grateful to both of them for sponsoring and to you, Guy, for being on here. Thanks. Bye, everyone.